The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Really like what we have on tap for today's show. We put in hours and hours. Eric, we put in, days of preparation to put this show together.
For the TV show? Yep, we do.
For the TV show.
It's a two-day project, like all day Monday and most of Tuesday.
But about a minute and a half ago, I said, hey, let's use this piece in today's show, which I like. We're very responsive and reactive to what's going on.
I like the word nimble.
Nimble.
Nimble's a good adjective when describing our stream show.
We do have Mike DeCourcy with us today.
One of the best.
He is, and he likes Sean Miller a lot.
So yes, he does.
I'm going to ask him about Sean Miller's future because Mike is a Pittsburgh guy. Sean's a Pittsburgh guy. We'll have Mike DeCourcy with us from the Sporting News, their basketball expert, Big Ten Network analyst. He will join us at 10:20 today. You will hear from Tyrann Mathieu at 10:35 as he explained why he decided to go to Houston and not stay with the Arizona Cardinals. That has become a very contentious topic. Yesterday, Peter King was with us. And we talked about the Adam Schefter report over the weekend that the Cardinals may be one of the two teams trying to trade up to the number two slot in the draft. There's been a lot of people reacting to what Peter King had to say on yesterday's show. If you missed it, we always put this show up in a podcast, and you can go check out Peter's interview over on sports360az.com. Last night, I found myself watching the Coyotes. How about you? Have you watched the Coyotes in months, years, decades? Been a while. If you're a diehard Coyote fan, you're mad at me for making that comment, but let's be truthful with one another. There hasn't been much reason to watch, and they won again. Break them up! Are we going to be sitting here in this offseason wondering who's going to have the better offseason to get through this dark hole that both teams have been in, whether it's the Coyotes or the Suns? Do we actually have a bit of drama? Will it come to pass that the Suns get the number one overall pick, and usually the team that tanks the hardest doesn't get the number one overall pick for whatever reason? And on the ice, when I watched the Coyotes last night, they are fun. I can't name 10 guys to you right off the top of my head. I can name a few, but not 10. So it's a good time to see what they're doing. I really like the direction that they're going. It's fun. Let's get you caught up some things in my mind in the world of sports now, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Guys, protect what matters most. Take a few minutes to check in on your life insurance. When was the last time you did that? Have you ever done it? It's real simple. You can go online, sagicornow.com, sagicornow.com, and get your life insurance. Protect what matters most. That is at Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Jared, do we have Herm Edwards? Are we in a spot where we can do that? Okay. So I want to do a few things here, but I'm going to start with something fun with Herm Edwards. So, and I didn't get to this yesterday. So over the weekend, actually Friday, I decided to go out to Luke Air Force Base. I have never been to Luke Days. When I was in San Diego, growing up in San Diego, big military, big Navy presence. You have the Marine Corps up at Camp Pendleton. I used to break up fights in the gym when I was like 18, 19 years of age. I was the gym attendant right next to Camp Pendleton. Really bad spot for an 18 to 19 year old to be in because fights happen all the time, whether it's on the softball field or in the basketball court. But I grew to appreciate the military presence there. I used to do this show, not this show, but a show on board of aircraft carriers, I should say, down in Harbor Island and in San Diego growing up there. I had a lot of fun doing shows, loved entertaining the troops, loved talking sports with the troops. It was a lot of fun. So when I heard that Herm Edwards was going to go out to Luke Air Force Base, figured, I need to get out there and I just want to talk to some people, see how it would all play out. Went out very early, took my 13-year-old with me. He was my camera assistant, gave him a thrill. The Blue Angels came out for the first time in 20 years. Herm Edwards was invited to fly in one of the planes. And that is where we pick up the video component here. Check it out.
Now we're already at 100 knots. There's 120. There's 140. I'll go ahead and pull back on the stick and get us flying.
The takeoff alone, I didn't anticipate it at all. I mean, he kind of said, well, we're going to just take off. And then when he went 45 degrees, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
It was unbelievable.
I can feel that a lot.
There's three. Now here comes four. So if you feel anything, squeeze the legs and engage the abs, and you should be fine. How you feeling?
Yeah, I can feel OGs.
Okay.
Because you're sitting there, and for every turn you make, it's not like being in a regular plane. It's like it happens fast. And then when you rolled us and went, we flew upside down. That was an experience. So, I don't even know how to explain this.
Here we go. Now, you don't have to squeeze or hick or do anything crazy while we're upside down. So, there we are, holding upside down.
Wow.
How are you feeling?
Oh, man, it's crazy.
That's funny, right?
Yes, it is.
All right. You good with that?
Yeah, man.
Okay, we'll roll up right.
Wow.
I was good all the way until the end, and he said, this is going to be the toughest thing you do. And I think I went night-night for a little while.
So that was 7.4, nearly 7.5 Gs. You made it about 120 or so degrees around the turn, but here and get you unstrapped.
Well, if you ever get invited to do this, you have to do it.
All right, that was Herm Edwards. And Tara put that together, one of our interns. Awesome stuff there. Great work. And that'll be part of the TV show this week on Fox Sports Arizona starting tonight, 5:30, 6 o'clock, before they play the Pistons, hopefully lose the Pistons. And then it will air afterwards, your sons. Sean Miller's future, at some point, I think, and I'm going to talk to Mike DeCourcy about this, at some point, the U of A fans that, here's how it works with U of A basketball fans. They start telling you over the summer how great they're going to be. And they're going to go to play like in Italy or Greece. They do one of these summertime deals. And they come back and they tell you how great they're going to be because on their social media, A Players program, they like to tell you how great they're going to be. And then the regular season hits and they're going to tell you how great they're going to be. And every game, they're going to tell you how great they're going to be. And then they go to Las Vegas and they bring all sorts of red and they tell you how great they're going to be. And then they get eliminated in March Madness. That's what happens every year. And they never make it to the Final Four, even with a bunch of NBA guys. So finally, some fans have started to realize that, you know, well, if you want to brag up your program, great. I don't have a dog in the fight. For those U of A fans that just catch this show occasionally and start sending me, you're an ASU guy. I didn't go to ASU, didn't go to U of A, don't care. Don't have a dog in the fight. I just know this, that the tide towards Sean Miller, it started turning last year, and then the fans would just gravitate towards the players and tell me Alonzo Trier is going to be the greatest guard ever. And I don't know, he just doesn't really have a way to find his way to a Final Four, or that DeAndre Ayton is going to be a great big man. And he is. I'm not going to dispute you on that. DeAndre Ayton's the best big man that I have seen while I've been here in Arizona over 25 years, without question, as a college player. And great big men don't come along very often. When you see them play in person, it's a thrill. For me, it's a thrill to see a big come along. We were both, Eric and I are both blessed to go see Marvin Bagley play at Corona del Sol. I was having lunch yesterday with a former Corona del Sol teacher. And this person said to me, one of the biggest shames is Marvin Bagley left Corona del Sol because that's where he wanted to be. The kid wanted to be there, but they wanted to pull him out and have him go elsewhere. He would be doing this. In reality, he should still be. Remember, he reclassified. He should still just be a senior in high school this year. People forget that. His standing should still be a high school kid. So I want to talk about DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley. We'll do that with Mike DeCourcy here shortly. I guess the question around Sean Miller, from my view, is when is something going to happen? When is something going to be announced? And if it is something along the lines of he's our guy, then everything that has been reported isn't true. And of course, there are red and blue people that see things through the lens of red and blue, meaning none of this stuff with Book Richardson or the letters FBI or pain, none of it, or wiretapping, all of it was just made up, of course. And you probably watch Fox News and believe everything on there too. So that's going on. This Tyronn Lue story, you guys see this where the Cleveland Cavaliers coach is leaving for exhaustion. He's taking a leave of absence. I was watching Steve Kerr last night. I watched some of the Warriors Spurs game, even though the Warriors were resting most of their guys. And I've seen Steve Kerr. Remember, Steve Kerr had his back stuff going on, and we weren't sure if Steve Kerr was ever going to coach again. The grind for these coaches mentally, it's the same as the players. The thing is, though, there are nights where the players can take a night off or their minutes can be limited. If you're Tyronn Lue and you're sitting here in mid-March, late March, the whole idea of coach burnout and coach health issues. Bob Huggins has had his ups and downs with his health. You'll hear from coaches as they get older saying, maybe it's time for me to step away. Mike Krzyzewski had back issues. He had to get away from Duke for a while. I think this stuff happens. In the NBA, I think what Tyronn Lue is doing, it's very similar to what the players do about this time of year, which is I need to rest up. The games aren't as crisp. They are not as pretty unless it's a certain team. A team that's looking at the standings and saying, we match up better with this squad than we do another squad. Like, people will get wound up about the Cavaliers not having the best record in the NBA. Please, please, as Bill Walton would say, get back to me at another point in time. We'll talk about Tyrann Mathieu. We'll hear from him in about 20 minutes. Also, we'll revisit what Peter King and I talked about yesterday, which involves the picks in the draft and moving up if the Cardinals are trying to move up towards quarterbacks. We'll do all that, but up next, we'll talk college basketball with Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. Sports360AZ.com. Log on, check out our content. It's all there for you to check out. Television show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. Our partnership with AZ Central Sports. We appreciate the partnership with the Republic. Stay with us. And now let's turn our attention to the NCAA tournament. U of A fans not happy. ASU fans somewhat, meh, the season is over, but a lot of progress, I think, made by Bobby Hurley. Of course, we saw DeAndre Ayton and Marvin Bagley here in Phoenix together for a brief nanosecond on the prep side over at Hillcrest Prep, and both of them are sitting there. The Suns are probably at the number one pick, so there's so much to get to, and we figured none better than Mike DeCourcy, as always, college hoops writer for the Sporting News. We've had him on many times in the past, studio analyst for the Big Ten Network as well. Also look at the Sweet 16. Mike, it's Brad Susmat. How are you?
I'm well, Brad. How are you?
I'm good. A lot going on out here, obviously. It's like a basketball hotbed, even though there's no teams left standing out here. Let's start with Sean Miller, because that is the one that is most polarizing out here. I've had you on many times on the show, and you are a fan of him as a coach, I think as a person as well. What is your view of what happened? And fans out here are wanting change. Do things just run their course? Is it time for Sean to maybe go elsewhere? What's your view?
Well, I would not be surprised if Sean wanted a fresh start after everything that's happened. But I always laugh at fans who want change. You know, every single coach who loses in this tournament, their fans want him fired. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. In Cincinnati, for instance, the previous two Sundays, they celebrated a conference regular season championship by winning a brutally tough game at Wichita on the road. Then the week later, they're standing up there with Jim Nance on the podium a couple of minutes before the selections are made, and they're getting all this airtime because they beat Houston in the Conference USA tournament final. Mm-hmm. And then they lose in the tournament, and it was a rough loss, but now everybody wants them gone, and you forget about everything that happened before that. Arizona fans, I mean, goodness gracious, how much better are you going to do? I mean, tell me what your idea is. If you got a better coach than Sean Miller in your pocket, show him to me.
And the roster that he is leaving, I think that's a big concern for fans, that he has built a lot of this on one-and-dones or guys that are there for a couple of seasons, and they haven't been able to advance to a Final Four as of yet. It's the shadow of Lute Olson that is always going to be there. The U of A has announced on April 12th they're going to put a statue of Lute Olson up and making it a big coming-together group that's come out here in the last week or so. I guess, Mike, I'm just wondering, you said it off the top, maybe it is, things do run their course somewhat, and maybe that is Sean's space.
Well, the question, though, is whether he'll have an opportunity to do that, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he will. And I don't think that he's walking away from a successful circumstance just because it's been a rough year. I think that it would have to be an opportunity that would be inviting for him to move on. But I don't think there is a great upside in Arizona making an unsolicited coaching change, because I think if they went ahead and made a decision on their own at this point, I think that would have repercussions for the program that would be lasting.
Mm-hmm.
you know, in you know, if you were to remove Sean Miller at this point, what statement would you be making? I don't think it's defensible on basketball grounds. So what statement are you making to the outside world if you go ahead and make that move?
Let's flip it around, Mike, over to Bobby Hurley. What's your view of where he has the program? I think he is on track in a really tough situation that he inherited. There's actually been some movement about getting a new facility for him built. He's still in a gym that's 30, 40 years old, whatever it is. It's a dump. But Bobby's done the best that he can do there, in my view. What's your view of Bobby Hurley and the job he's done?
Oh, I think he's done a really nice job, absolutely. The concern, obviously, is that several of the best players were seniors.
Right.
So, can you keep the momentum forward, or do you have to take a step back while you continue to bring in really good players? But I think that Bobby's done a very nice job in a circumstance that has been less than passionate about its basketball program for a less than short time. I mean, it's been a very, it's been a tough sell for a really long time at ASU, and he's got enthusiasm there, he's got energy, and now it's just a question of, maybe making the circumstance better. You know, I'll confess, it's not a building that I've been to. I mean, I've seen a lot of games at McHale, but not any there. But, I remember what a difference it made in Southern Cal to get out of its prior circumstance. Another place that I did visit for college games on occasion when they played at the sports arena.
Yep.
And how energizing it was to be in such a terrific building like the Galen Center. It's been very good for them. And that's a great place to watch a game. And so, I will take your word for it on the current environment. But I know that that if you do put yourself in a circumstance where your building is better, it can be a real boost for your program.
Yeah, trust me on this. You don't need to schedule a flight to come out here to see an ASU home game to go to the building. If anything, if you schedule a flight out here, go to ASU, then go crosstown over to see what Dan Marley has to work with and the absolute estate that he has over at Grand Canyon and the job that he's doing there. It's really interesting, and the two sides won't play each other as of yet. The presidents are kind of spitballing one another, but I think Dan's done a nice job in building his program, and Bobby's on a completely different level. Bobby Hurley Sr. was with us last week, Mike, and suggested that Bobby's sideline demeanor, which is a lot has been made out of that, as animated as he gets, he's going to grow out of that he hasn't really coached that many games on the college level as of yet. I'm curious if you've noticed or seen any of Bobby's sideline behavior, antics, for lack of a better term.
Oh, I've certainly watched him, but I don't think he's gotten an inordinate number of technical fouls. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No. But he's constantly...
So, I don't care what they do on the sideline. People make a big fuss about how this guy or that guy comports himself on the sideline. It doesn't matter. I mean, unless it results in technical fouls, it doesn't matter. I mean, people think that makes a difference to the players. Players get used to it. John Calipari has been doing this for 30 years. I mean, there are moments when he is maniacal on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others where he's calm, and there's others where he's teaching, and people focus on the crazy moments. Sometimes guys get tired out of it. I mean, I don't think you see Bob Huggins as dramatically, as demonstrative as he was, when I covered him at Cincinnati in the late 2000s.
Sure.
He was probably even more so prior to that. But, I don't think that it makes any difference at all in a coach's performance, how they operate on the sideline. Jim Calhoun complained about every single call, every literal call that went against his team for 40 years and won 3 national championships. Every single one. And there was not a call that went against him that he liked. So, I mean, but at the end of the day, I mean, his teams were great and his players got better and they had great success.
Mike DeCourcy is with us, college hoops writer for the Sporting News. He's also a studio analyst with the Big Ten Network. He's been with us several times. You can follow him over on Twitter and check out all of his content at the Sporting News, sportingnews.com. DeAndre Ayton versus Marvin Bagley. Can you split it? Because Phoenix Suns fans are wanting one or the other. They're in the position to have the worst record in the NBA. What do you see between those two players if you had to choose one, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what Marvin Bagley offers you is if we don't win, then what a great second prize. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. Because DeAndre Ayton is an easy choice for me as one overall. More agile, more dynamic, a more complete player. Marvin Bagley is a spectacular scorer and will score a truckload of points in the NBA. But DeAndre Ayton is a more complete player and taller and longer and a better defender and a defender who has been basically forced. I mean, because John didn't play much, if any, zone, and I'm not sure whether that was the best course with this group, but he didn't play much. And so DeAndre has had to play. He's had to play man-to-man defense the entire year, as well as has had to play, in most circumstances, defending perimeter players because he was the power forward rather than the center in most of their lineups. So he's had to do things defensively that Marvin Bagley really hasn't even had to think much about yet, because his team was partially zoned for a lot of the year and is pretty much exclusively zoned now. So I think that Ayton has more, is a more obvious pick to me. If your team has a certain need and you feel that your team needs offensive production and that everything else is covered and that you can maybe teach him to be an effective defender, then I think maybe it's possible that you could defend taking Bagley. You certainly will get a very good player. But if it's a question of who is the best overall NBA prospect, I'm not even sure. I hate to say this because I think it demeans Marvin, and he's tremendous.
Sure,
but I'm not sure it's really that close.
Yeah, it's interesting. The two of them were actually teammates out here for a short period of time at a prep school, and then they went separate. Well, Bagley went separate ways. I hate this question I'm about to ask you, but it's one that fans always pepper me with, and that is,
okay,
who do they remind? Who I hate this question, but fans want to know, who does Ayton remind you of? Who does Bagley remind you of?
You know, someone brought this up a while ago, and I had a comp for Bagley, and now I've misplaced it. I don't remember who, because it was so hard to find one.
Mm-hmm.
There's been very few players like him. I mean, in a lot of ways, he's like, and I hate to do this because this is like the cheat, right?
Right.
But he's like a more athletic and taller and longer Michael Beasley. So then in that way, he doesn't resemble Michael Hartley at all, right?
Yeah.
But you know what he is? I mean, he is an offensive machine. I mean, he can score points around a 12 foot arc of the basket, like very few players ever have. I mean, maybe an Elvin Hayes to an extent. That height and the offensive ability. I suppose the Big E is about as close as you're going to get. There might be another one more recent, but that's a good one because he was an 18 foot jump shooter. This was really in the day before. I'm not even sure how much of the Big E's career, the NBA even had a three-point line. So he was a 16, 18-foot jump shooter, which right now that's what Marvin is. I mean, he made a three in Pittsburgh the other day when I was there, but it's not a big part of his game yet. I think it will be eventually. But right now he is a phenomenal scorer around the bucket, and Elvin Hayes is a good example. As far as Ayton's concerned, when have we ever had a 7-foot-1 guy? Maybe David Robinson, 7-foot-1 guy, that dynamic, that long, that bouncy. Probably Robinson is the best comp there. Robinson had more time to develop into his body, more time to grow his game before he got to the NBA, because he played 4 years in college and then had another 2 years beyond that, I believe. I think he went 2 full years before he was released from the service. So he had a lot more time, but Ayton has a lot of those qualities, the athleticism, the size and the length and the offensive ability that David had.
Before I let you go, and I'm curious on this far, and I'm not going to run through every game, but are we going to be sitting here a week from now having Villanova, Duke, Kansas, and Purdue, basically? It's going to come down to those, and most of the upsets are out of the way. Yeah, we have the Chicago, Nevada side of things. But by and large, Mike, are we going to just see the usual players rise up, in your opinion, after this weekend?
Well, I think Villanova is going to win their region. They're the best team that I've seen this season. Duke is really dangerous and potent, and I think they'll be moving on as well. So there'll be at least a couple. But Kentucky has to. Kentucky's the only team in their region that would fit that description. Now, I think they're the best team there, and I think they'll get out of it. But it wouldn't be shocking if they found a way, as a group of almost exclusively freshmen, to mess it up.
Well, I'll let you go off that, Mike. We appreciate the time and the insight, as always. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
It's Mike DeCourcy with us. Mike DeCourcy with the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So in the NFL news cycle, Tyrann Mathieu popped up yesterday. He had his first press conference in Houston, and I've noticed fans are not happy with the Arizona Cardinals over letting Tyrann Mathieu go, and I would be the one that would stand on the Cardinals' side of the street and say, look, none of us like getting into a pissing match over what happened and who said this or who said that. But at the end of the day, how many times did Tyrann Mathieu finish the season on the injured reserve? 3 of the last 4 years. Yes, he's only 25 years of age. Yes, he made big plays as a safety, but when it comes time to look at dollars, he signs a one-year contract, so he's betting on himself at $7 million. He goes to a team that up front, Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt, assuming Watt comes back healthy, that's a heck of a group. They went 4-12 last year. He said no to a team that went 8-8, to a team that went 4-12, but that 4-12, I think, is a little bit, if you dig deeper, deceiving. Deshaun Watson was hurt. Watt was hurt. Injuries are part of the deal. I don't really blame the Cardinals on this one for saying it's time to go. I think when Tyrann Mathieu signed this deal, even last season we were saying in October, November, it's not the same guy. And it doesn't matter how many jerseys you sell over Dick's Sporting Goods. Doesn't matter. Can you play? Can you not play? Are you better off moving on from someone who can still make plays? But you look at the numbers that they have out there, and they decide to go a different direction. He takes less money to go to Houston, essentially. And yet, every year he finished this, well, 3 of the last 4 years, he's on injured reserve. I cannot blame the Cardinals. So here's Tyrann Mathieu yesterday. For context's sake, here's Tyrann Mathieu meeting with the Houston media, including the question about his time in Arizona.
You become a staple in the Phoenix area. How hard was it for you to leave? Did you ever seriously consider staying once they decided to ask you to take a pay cut?
I did consider staying, and it was definitely hard to leave Phoenix. Obviously, just being rooted in the community how I was, and having the kind of fan base that I had there, and not only that, but the contract and the responsibilities of being a professional, a football player. I took great pride in it. I had a lot of fun. I got a lot of great memories in Arizona. And, like I said, I just want to push forward, move forward, and become a leader here in Houston.
Okay, so pretty politically correct. That's what it's about. He did have a lot of fans here. The popularity was off the charts. It was for many reasons. We all like this story of somebody overcoming adversity. In his case, he overcame a lot of adversity. Look, I'm not sitting here banging on Tyrann Mathieu. I wish him well. He was great while he was here in Phoenix, but I do think it's somewhat unfair to paint the Cardinals out as the villain here and not bringing him back. He was recruited to go to New Orleans, didn't do it. His agent, Tom Condon, is the same agent as J.J. Watt. You add it up, he goes to Houston, to a team that had a worse record by far than what the Cardinals had, and he wants to go prove himself this season. The way he's going to prove himself is stay on the field.
And J.J. Watt tweeted at him, saying essentially, hey, come to Houston,
yeah,
like hours after he was released by the Cardinals. So it makes sense. The only real problem I have with the Cardinals letting him walk is he's only 25 years old.
But when you get hurt every year, I know.
You're right. But he's really not even in his prime yet. And if he can stay healthy – and he becomes a Pro Bowler every year, you know, hindsight being 2020. But I agree with you. I think the Cardinals, from what I was told, made him a relatively fair offer, and he said thanks but no thanks, and now he's a Houston Texan.
He could have gone, but I thought he was going to go home to New Orleans. And Michael Thomas was tweeting at him directly, just like J.J. Watt did, and he decided to go to Houston. I mean, look.
Well, because he was displaced during Katrina went to Houston, so he does sort of have ties to the Houston area.
He has ties there, but he also has a pass rush there in Houston, you know, so it's not like he's walking into a situation where he's out on an island. If they've got a ferocious rush, then he's going to be able to make plays.
And you mentioned Deshaun Watson. I mean, that's a good
quarterback. That's all well and good, but he's got guys in front of him that are going to make it easier for him to make plays. I mean, if I'm him and I look at, okay, I'm going to Houston.
Division's easier.
That's where I'm getting at. That's what I'm getting at. I said on the air the other day, and this upset some Cardinal fans, tough. I would have liked to have seen him go to San Francisco or Seattle. Look, it adds to the story. I hope the Cardinals have Houston pop up on their schedule at some point in time. You know, I'd like to see what Tyrann Mathieu is able to do and see it in person.
I mean, can you imagine, Brad, the buzz in Seattle when the Seahawks play the Niners Richard Sherman twice a year? So
it'll be great. And Eric, you know both those games with Richard Sherman, they're going to be Sunday night, Monday. Thursday night. Monday night doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. Exactly.
According to Sean McDonough. So a bad schedule. What did you make out of Peter yesterday with the trade stuff?
I took more out of what he said about Sam Bradford and the Cardinals
overpaying,
risking it. I think that every year we have this conversation, Brad, about is this year the Cardinals are going to move up? Da 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 da.
Right.
And this has to be the year. It has to. I mean, this draft is loaded with talented quarterbacks, but like he said. Peter King said it's going to cost the Cardinals a 1-2 this year, and then the next two years
of ones to get to number two. Which is what Adam Schefter reported, that teams like the Arizona Cardinals,
when you're sitting at 15,
and Buffalo Bills are trying to move up to the number two slot.
It's just such a crapshoot, because if you hit the home run and you get the franchise quarterback, you get the Jared Goff, you get the, you know, whoever, it's fine. You're set up for years. But if you miss on the quarterback, you don't have a first-round pick for the next 3 years. And who knows about the health of Sam Bradford?
But here's the thing on that. You can always go out. If you decide to tear apart your draft, which I am myself not in favor of, I am not in favor of trading away a boatload of picks. And look, I'll be full disclosure. I grew up covering the NFL with Bobby Bethard as the general manager. And Bobby did take Ryan Leaf. Everybody holds that over his head. But Bobby made more smart picks. And I think Steve has made smart picks.
Especially with the Redskins, too, when he was with the Redskins.
Sure.
He made great picks.
But the thing that Bobby would do is take a high pick and trade back and get that extra second, get that extra third. And it's no different 20 years later. But I think you can, in this space, in this day and age of NFL, you can get back into the draft the following year. Yeah, we traded our number one. Every year it seems like New England makes moves to get into the draft. Somehow, when they see a player that they like, then I'm taking a model franchise that goes out and does it. And Steve has shown the propensity, Eric. I mean, the Chandler Jones deal, that was pretty complex. That was not an easy one for him to pull off. And he was able to do it.
And it was a great trade. Turned out to be a great deal.
It was a great deal. And yet, when you look at where they are right now, are you better off staying at 15 and taking your wide receiver and taking Rudolph, let's just say, or another quarterback in the second or third round? When they went on Logan Thomas on the fourth round, it was just, to me, it was too far down. And people say, well, Tom Brady, you can't use that comp all the time. You can't always fall back on Tom Brady, in my view. I just feel like, If you move up to two and all you're doing is trading picks and you're gutting your draft for this year on that quarterback, that just doesn't feel like what Steve would do. That's my point on it. And if you're going to part with 15 and you're two to move up to 10 to get the guy, I'm fine with that. I have a really hard time. I know from an excitability standpoint, fans would love the idea of, man, the Cardinals trade up from 15 to 2, and Baker Mayfield is here, and the world is all going to be good. Because that's the, I mean, that's the word, is that Baker Mayfield is the guy that everybody's moving up trying to get. Now, this is the line season, just so we're fair. It's the time of year where everybody's lying when it comes to agents. And so I talk to these guys, and I take it with a big, big grain of salt. You know, I can't imagine you trade all the way up to get Josh Allen. I just can't do it.
But the back half of this quarterback class, when you're talking about guys like Lamar Jackson, Luke Falk, Ryan Finley, I mean, there is, if they stayed there, they could get Mason Rudolph, like you said. They could still get maybe not their franchise quarterback, but definitely a guy that has a lot of talent, a lot more than in past drafts when it comes to the quarterback class.
Yeah,
I mean, a couple of years ago, there were like one or two quarterbacks and then just a bunch of nobodies. This year, it really is like six, seven deep of true NFL quarterback prospects.
No, I mean, I don't need Blaine Gabbert taking the middle of the first round. I don't need that at this point with this organization, because I think Dave Pasch put it right yesterday. They went 8-8. I look at the division, and yeah, the 49ers are turning things around at light speed, but that doesn't mean that they're invincible. And the Seahawks are going through a retool right now. And the Rams, the Rams have made a ton of moves here for a team that had a strong season last year, putting a boatload of money into their secondary.
And they're bringing in Ndamukong Suh for a visit today.
So. Yeah. All right. We have some final thoughts on today and what's going on after this timeout. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. You just found us. We are here every day. Been doing this for the last 6 years, having fun day in, day out. And our website, full of content. You can check it out at sports360AZ.com. Our television show is tonight, before and after the Suns Pistons game, starting at 5:30, then at 6, following the game at about 10:30. And 11 o'clock on Fox Sports Arizona. Our partnerships all over the place. Thanks for being with us. Before we get out of here, tonight the Suns are home against Detroit. I mean, Stanley Johnson for the Pistons. And it's so difficult, I would imagine, to be Jay Triano right now. And when I see Jay Triano interviewed or hear his sound bites after games, he's very thoughtful. He's very well thought out. I have a good feel about him. I just don't know how Robert Sarver can say, you know what, he's gotten his head kicked in, and at times the team looks like a team that said, yeah, we don't want to be here, and you let a guy like Jay Triano go. It's no different than Alvin Gentry. Alvin Gentry had an epic meltdown this last weekend, and he's fighting for his players with New Orleans. Alvin Gentry should have never been let go here in Phoenix, but that was another misstep by Robert. You can make the case that Jay Triano, you're not going to find many better basketball men, but when the culture of losing is so bad as it is here, and they're in a tough spot because they need to lose. They just do. If you're one of those that, I think they have like 11 games left. If you're one of those that wants them to see them go on an 11-game win streak, then all this hard work at sucking and tanking would be for naught. All this hard work at putting yourself in the best position to draft DeAndre Ayton would go for naught. If you're able to draft DeAndre Ayton and you put him alongside of Josh Jackson and you put him alongside of Devin Booker and you hire the right coach, suddenly the Suns' 8 years and running of not making the postseason is either going to come to an end, or the fans will completely embrace the young kids and be willing to grow with them. To me, that's been the bigger issue on this whole deal with the Suns, because the front office, the ownership group, has been so dysfunctional. And the on-the-court product has been just intolerable. And some of the veterans they brought in are just disasters. When Mike DeCourcy brought up Michael Beasley, I about wanted to puke on my shoes. It's nothing against Mike. He's just trying to find a comp. Do you see the look on my face on that one, Eric, when he brought up Beasley?
Yeah, I cringed myself.
I mean, everything that is wrong about the NBA is Michael Beasley.
Maybe the Michael Beasley at Kansas State, college player Michael Beasley, but not the Michael Beasley we saw here.
Not the guy that just took money here and took money and keeps taking money all around, and you hope he gets his life in order, but the NBA should not be a place to rehab players. It just shouldn't. You know, the Josh Childress and the on and on of veterans that have been brought in that have been the wrong veteran guys. And so, you know, you take a game like tonight and it's just playing out the string you would hope that the Suns end up losing. And then you look at Jay Triano and say, okay, if I'm the owner, do I still have faith in Ryan McDonough as the general manager? And when I look at Marquise Chris and his lack of development, his lack of maturity, and we saw it the day that he was drafted, that's been a bad pick. I don't care how many dunks, you know, highlight reel dunks. It's 2 points. It's still the same as a jump shot. Just hit me a 15-foot jump shot, play some defense, and don't always get in foul trouble. Not that hard. For him, it is. Dragan Bender's been a nice player at times. Again, I wouldn't say he's been an impactful guy that's come in here. And you know that when these players leave this place and they go elsewhere, they'll probably turn into something. It's the worst part of what the organization has become top to bottom. Is this is just a stopping point for players, and they move them along. And as much as I didn't like Markieff Morris and the Morris twins when they were here, both those players have found their way onto NBA teams and have performed as players to help you get into the playoffs and have both been very good role players. They have been. So what was it about here? Was it that the culture here wasn't right, that they just were immature idiots when they were here, that there wasn't enough mentoring, there wasn't enough stability within the organization? Because they've left and both of them have turned out to be pretty good NBA players. And so, you know, the Jay Triano side of it, there's people like Steve Nash that swear by Jay Triano that make you believe he should be the guy. But it's just to bring a guy back and to bring the general manager back after just another disastrous season on so many levels, it seems far-fetched. It just does. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric, as always, produces. From here, we go over to TV show mode. You'll check out our show tonight. We invite you to do so over on Fox Sports Arizona with 16 airings this week. You can check it out there. Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, and Peter King, a big portion of that will be in the show, and some other good stuff on the pro college and high school front on the football side. Thanks for being with us. Enjoy your Tuesday.